Hey, everybody. Thank you once again for hanging out with us here. You are listening to a BTG bonus episode right now. I'm hanging out in the studio today with my good buddy, Jason. Hey, Jason.
Bob.
We have an extra special guest on the line with us today. We are talking to musician, artist, ghost hunter, renaissance man of all kinds, Mr. Grant Wilson, the Vice President and Art Director of Rather Dashing Games. Good day, sir.
Wow, that's quite the introduction. Good day.
We are thrilled to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
It's a real joy. You, as we said, you are Vice President and Art Director of Rather Dashing Games, and we are a fan of your work because we are both big fans of Four Taverns.
Oh, that's so good to hear. That's definitely one of my favorites, and people love it. They just got to find it. Once they find it, they love it.
Yeah, yeah. We got a chance. I heard about it through Twitter, actually, because I follow you on Twitter, and I heard about it, and I bought a copy. We got to try it with our wives, and you know what? When you start to play the game, it feels like it's going to be really simple. You know, it's really approachable. Yeah. And then as you start to play, you realize there's a lot of strategy built into
sure
it.
Is.
And it just kind of sneaks up on you.
Yeah.
It's not a relationship building game either.
No, not
far
at all
from it.
But no, that's good because that's exactly the type of game we like to make where you can learn it in 10 minutes, but as soon as you're done playing, you want to play it again and again and again because there's hidden kind of subtle strategy that you start to pick up on. So
yeah,
that's good. I'm glad you guys like that.
Yeah, you guys definitely hit the mark with that.
You nailed it, yeah.
Great game.
Yeah, I have a few friends who actually picked it up at Gen Con last year as well, and they're big fans too. So we're trying to spread the love.
Awesome. Well, keep in mind that if it does really well, we have an amazing expansion plan for it. But
that's good to hear.
Good to know.
Yeah. A couple other games that you guys have in your repertoire here. You mentioned that two that I'm not familiar with. Maybe you could give those a quick plug for us.
Sure, absolutely. I'll do Red Hot Silly Peppers first, and that's one that we designed for younger kids. It's kind of a subliminal math game. Like you're adding by fives, but you have a spinner, and you spin the spinner, and it tells you what temperature salsa to make. And so you have peppers, and you have fruit and things in your hand, and you have to try to make a bowl of salsa with the most amount of cards using addition and subtraction. You know, if I can make a bowl of salsa with two cards, then the next person has a chance to make it with three. If they can make it with three cards, then they get my cards and their cards. Whoever has the most wins. And there are, of course, some sneaky things. You can steal people's salsa and all that stuff. So it's a lot of fun. Actually, we made it for kids, but a lot of adults play it, and they really like it.
Cool.
Then we have X Marks the Spot, which is more of a strategy game. It's kind of a tile-laying game, but you have these cards. And you lay them down, you kind of build the board as you go, and you're trying to make X's with your pirate flags. But there are things like the Kraken in there and cannons, and you can parlay and with other players. And that one's a lot of fun. That's a game that you can – it seems easy at first like checkers, but you can master it. That one's a lot of fun and actually very popular. So
great. Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds great. We always like to start by asking people how they got into tabletop gaming, you know, board gaming, that kind of stuff. What got you started in this?
Well, you know what? I actually got interested in it before I even knew I was interested in it. when I was a kid, obviously we played, you know, Life and Monopoly and all that stuff. And I realized that we used to take a bunch of the games we didn't like that my parents bought. We would flip the board over and draw our own board and make up our own games. And they're fantasy games typically or space, science fiction. And I actually found some of them a couple of years ago, and they were not bad, you know. And but my friend and partner, Mike Ritchie, who is the president of Rather Dashing Games and the actual game designer, has been in the industry for about 8 years. He worked with Mind Twister USA. He made games for Barnes & Noble. He's made games for the X Games. And he's a really good game designer, but he wanted to branch out on his own. And I've known him since I was five, and we've always wanted to build something together. And it just kind of clicked one day where he's been doing this, and I can draw the art, and I also have this history of game design. And so we combined forces, and it's turned out great so far.
That's great. It sounds like it really happened organically for you.
It did. And it's funny because it was just kind of an untapped well that we didn't even – we have so many other things we're doing together that we didn't even put our – we didn't even realize that this could happen. And it's awesome.
That's fantastic. What games have you been playing lately? Maybe you can share some of your favorites for our audience so they can look for some other things.
Absolutely. I have a collection. If you can see my office here, it's ridiculous. But I love playing Ticket to Ride with my wife. That one's an easy one.
Yeah.
There's Defenders of the Realm. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I love that game. That's a blast. We play that all the time. And the one that we've just recently gotten into heavily is Descent. Have you ever heard of Descent?
I've heard a lot of good things about Descent.
Okay, I don't know anything about it.
Oh my gosh, it's incredible. And it's like an RPG, but it kind of plays itself. One person is the overlord, and he's playing all the bad guys and the game itself, while the other players are teaming up against you. And if you've ever played an RPG like Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder, the GM always kind of wants to make sure that you have stuff to kill and you have treasure.
Yeah.
But when you play this, the bad guy wants to win as well. So it's really interesting. It's way more dynamic, and you really feel that sense of urgency, like we're going to fail. If we don't put our heads together, we're actually going to fail. And so I've been playing that one a lot. That's a great one, as well as, you know, Dominion, all the classics.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you, as we said before, you're the art director for Rather Dashing Games. So I just had a couple questions regarding your work as an art director. How much would you say, you know, how closely do you work with Michael on the game designs?
On the design itself? Well, the process kind of works like this. Mike can be inspired by anything. So he'll come to me with an idea of a game mechanic or whatever. And he'll just kind of, he's almost spitting math at me. Like, here's probability, here's this stuff. And, you know, and as he's saying this, you know, as an artist, my screen is blank. And as he's telling me these things, the images start to pop up and they start to become color. And I start getting these ideas and a feel for the game. So I don't say much. I let him explain the game to me. And that generates a feel or a theme. Because one of our mission statements at Rather Dashing Games is to make games that are rather dashing. They have some lore to them. And so like Dwarven Miner, the game mechanic of one of our games is coming. Is can be anything. It could be a game about baking. It could be a game about building starships, whatever. But you got to give it that face. You know, you got to give it some personality. And so he'll spit the gameplay at me, and I'll spit back feel, and then together we start to feed off each other. He starts to augment the gameplay based on what I'm telling him as for the story part of it. And together we build it. And then once we kind of have an idea of, you know, once we get the game to where we can test play it, then I kind of take off the artist hat a little bit and we really get into the nuts and bolts of it and we break it down, we kick it and beat it up and try to make it the best possible. But at the same time, I'm also looking at the information that needs to be available to the player and how to best organize that and make the right things pop out and all that. So it's a very, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but it's a very dynamic, kind of fluid process, but it works because we are kind of a hive mind.
That's interesting. One of the things that we talk about a lot on the show is theme versus mechanics and where inspiration, where ideas come from, and when do you start with theme, when do you start with mechanics, and maybe that's something you can speak to a little bit more. Does it sound like Michael starts with mechanics before theme, and then you guys bring that theme in together?
Yes, typically that's the age-old discussion of chicken or the egg. I mean, in game design, is which is first. And honestly, don't force it. Whatever happens, happens. If you have a – boy, it'd be cool to have a game about taverns, you know. Well, let's make four taverns. That rarely happens. Usually it's the mechanic, and then you build around that. But whichever it is, just go with the flow and kick it around. And you have to have – if you're a solo game designer, that's awesome, but you have to have someone to keep you in check. And if you're a part of a pair or a company that's making a game, then you need to be willing to put pride aside and let the best ideas float to the top. And that's kind of the motto we live by. And I mean, typically, because Mike just – he could make up a game a week easy. I mean, we have another 20 projects waiting in the wings. that we're just trying to get the company up and running so we can get these out.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that's really good advice. What you say don't design in a vacuum. That's something that Jason and I we're fortunate that because we do this show, we talk a lot about what we're working on with each other, and we bounce a lot of ideas off each other. And I don't mean to speak for you, Jason, but you know, I think we're at a point here where we're pretty open with each other, how we feel about each other's work, you know?
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, like you and Michael, I mean, Rob and I have been friends for quite a long time. Not since we were five, but a long time.
Yeah.
And we have pretty different design styles.
We sure do.
So, that can help things kind of jive. And I tend to make games that are more complex, and Rob likes things that are more streamlined. And
right.
So we find we meet in the middle a lot of times, right. and that organic kind of...
Right.
Mixture really helps.
Yeah, so to turn that into something for our listeners, if you're on your own designing games, you know, more power to you, but one of your challenges you might not be considering is that you're alone and you don't have somebody else to give you external feedback, and that's really important.
That is very important. And if I can just interject again, we have a lot of people coming to us with game ideas. And you can tell who did it on their own. It comes and they're very protective and defensive of it. And you don't need to be that way. Like, just if you're a game designer and if you're ready, you think you're ready to shop it out around somewhere, make sure you put it in front of a bunch of people first. And when you shop it out, listen to the professionals. Now, don't take it all with a grain of salt, but listen to the people who have already broken into the industry, because it's not an easy industry to break into. So listen to them, take their advice, take it with a grain of salt, keep the good, get rid of the bad. You can always contact, Build a Game, and you can contact us, and we'd be happy to help. We have helped several people get up and off on their own out into the industry. So
that's fantastic.
That is fantastic. And I definitely, you know, along the way, we've met a lot of game designers, right? And a lot of them. You know, not a lot of them. Some of them are like you said, they're extremely protective of, you know, of their work. And I remember I was fortunate enough last year at Gen Con, I met a publisher and he bought one of my games. And I had said to Rob, you know, we had kind of talked about where's the line to where you would say if they wanted to reskin the game or retheme the game. And I said, there really is no line.
I mean,
you know, I understand they need to make a product that's going to sell. And I was fortunate that they liked my theme. And I tend to be a more theme first type of person where, so that worked for me, but you have to be open. I mean, the first thing I did when I sat in with a publisher and he started playing my game was I pulled out a notepad and started taking notes about what he had to say. And he said he respected that because obviously you want their feedback and you want to be receptive to that feedback. Cause if a publisher is looking for a designer and you appear not to be receptive, they don't necessarily want to work with people that aren't receptive, because that's going to be a long process trying to publish your game.
Right. And not only that, but the thought is, am I wasting my time even in my breath even talking to this person?
Sure. Yep.
And I mean, it's not Fortune 500 companies or anything, but it's, you know, people are working hard in this industry and, you know, they deserve that respect. But especially where the games you make are more complicated, you were saying a little bit more.
Yeah, generally, yeah. Mine are a little more complex. And
yeah, that's the kind where you start with a theme, because that makes sense. Like, most Euro-style games start with a theme. Okay, I want to, you know, I want to harvest apples on an apple orchard. How can we make that game?
Right.
And a lot of the best games come out that way.
Right. Most definitely.
Yeah.
No, and something I just want to point out that I think you were inferring that makes sense to me as to what we were just saying was, you know, some of those people would come to you and say, hey, here's my game. And you may not agree to publish that game, there's no reason you still can't send them on their way with valuable feedback if they're receptive to it.
Well, that's it. That's exactly it. And what I was hinting at, too, is that if you're a game designer, don't, like you said, don't live in a vacuum. Show it to family, friends. Don't. Keep it fluid. Like, don't put that game out there and expect it to be perfect the first shot. Never going to be. The whole point of showing people is to get to improve the game. So show it to people and don't be so protective of it that it never gets any better. So
right.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that I wanted to ask you about. I like to think of myself as a little bit of an artist too, but I mean, I'm pretty bad, but anyway,
he's I like better to try. Than he gives himself credit for
it. I like to try, but you know, and I really enjoy that part of a new design of actually, you know, getting into the computer and laying out cards. And that's part of the fun for me, but I have to, I keep reminding myself to stop and, you know, work on the game first and make it look pretty second. At what point do you start taking those next steps to turn, you know, boring? Because, you know, obviously the art of a game and the way it looks, it makes a huge difference. And it's a major part of how fun a game can be to play. So at what point do you switch from blank white pieces of paper with black text on them to actually putting some graphics on there?
The beautiful part is to have a middle ground. And that's the secret. When we start playing a game, Mike will have cards in sleeves, you know, that he's just written words on.
Yeah.
And we'll play. And as we go, I'm thinking of organization first. Okay, how can this information be better presented? And so we talk about that. And then we make a second version of it where I have laid out the blocks of information. I'll have a cheesy hand-drawn quick sketch of whatever should be in there. Just to see if that's appealing. And so we're developing them at the same time. But I don't get into the serious art until the game has been test played heavily, because I don't want to sit there and draw, like in Dwarven Miner, I had to come up with 15 unique dwarves. I don't want to sit there and draw those, color them, shade them, and come and find out that we don't want to use dwarves. We'd rather use, you know? there's a middle process. There's a middle ground where you have not just text and you have not finished artwork, but that gives you the layout so that you can say, all right, this is appealing to the gamer and the information is in the right place. And then, of course, you just fill in the blanks with quality art.
That's great. That makes a lot of sense. You know, a question from that. So something Rob and I have done in the past, and I did with my first game, and we're both looking to do with games now that we're taking to Gen Con this year. Mm-hmm. We actually went out and had a little bit of artwork done for the game. Not a ton. A couple sample pieces. So that when we're showing it to a publisher, we're kind of saying, here's what I'm thinking for this game. Here's kind of my vision. What would you think of that if someone brought that to you when they're trying? Because you're an artist, you're looking at it differently. I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are on somebody who's trying to get you to publish them, bringing you some sample art for trying to kind of just get the theme down and show you their thoughts.
Right. You're talking about like the situation you're in is a little bit different from mine, as far as, you know, you guys seem to be making games and then selling them to a company, and that probably what most people who are listening to this have in mind. Up your own company is, trust me, it's a pain in the neck. We've been doing it. but whatever. So from my standpoint, to come up with a game. If someone came up to me with a game that had solid mechanics and they had a couple pieces of artwork, even if they were just concept sketches, that to me would mean a lot more than someone who just came up to me with a game, because they're saying, all right, I've seen that this game works and I have a theme that can work. I'm not dumb enough to pay the artist to draw it all out and then give it to you. You know, like I'm smart enough. I have enough business sense to just bring a couple things to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
that's good. It's good to hear.
And also, you know, that I care enough about this game to have invested some of my own money in something more than 3x5 cards.
Yeah, fair enough.
Excellent. That's good to hear. I mean, we haven't got a chance to ask a publisher that before. So
yeah.
Other than, you know, at least not on the show.
So, right.
Then one question I did have, Grant, do you do all the artwork for the games?
I have done all the artwork except for X Marks the Spot. That's something that we have a friend, Nigel Saad, who is an excellent, very unique artist, especially when it comes to pirate flags.
Nigel Saad, he kind of looks a little bit like Jack Sparrow, right?
Yeah, I think Jack Sparrow's based on.
We see him at Gen Con every year.
Yeah, we do. Don't we?
We don't know him, but he has a booth at Gen Con every year.
Well, he's worth knowing. He's a great guy. He's a fantastic artist, and he's got the same mentality as us, where it's just kind of, you know, he just wants to be a good guy in the industry, and he's a good friend of ours, and he made great pirate art, and that's what worked best. So I took a back seat on that one and artistically directed it. Obviously, I made sure, you know, it looked right and everything was great. And that was good. That was a great deal because it helps him out too, you know. But I've done the art on everything else.
Right on. Cool. So can you describe a little bit of the process? I mean, it was different because he's a friend of yours, so it's not like you just hired an artist off the street, but working as an art director with the artist under you, you know, kind of guiding them for what you want for the game.
Yep. Yeah, that is definitely a different process. It was the way the game is built. It wasn't too difficult. As far as, you know, we said we wanted 4 pirate flags and we wanted them to be, historically accurate pirate flags and real pirates. And so he took those and made it his own style. And then it was a matter of, you know, just simple touches and aesthetics and adding lines to denote the game of the line of play and color and things like that. And, it was nice because I didn't have to put my heart out there to be judged by people. But it was interesting because, to work with an artist, thankfully Nigel is great. And to work with an artist that loves their art and protects their art and tell them that they have to change it is not an easy thing to do. It's not easy.
Yeah, sure. I bet.
Right.
Well, we've been kind of dancing around Dwarven Minor here a lot. Why don't you tell us what that's all about?
Oh my gosh, this game we are so excited for. We were actually last year at Gen Con, we were presenting a game we had called Tanks for Playing that is an awesome, great game. But this game came up out of nowhere. Mike suddenly had a great idea for the game, and it was just a very small idea at the time, and then we started working with it. And we loved it. And we played it with people and they loved it. And, you know, we would test play with people and we'd only have time for one game and they would want to play 2 and 3 games. And we're like, we don't have time for that. Like, we can't. And that's a great problem to have.
Yeah.
But Dwarven Minor is something we're very excited about, not only because the game itself is a blast. I had a blast making the artwork for it. But this is just the beginning of what we foresee as a line of games. We already have Elven Ranger figured out. We also have Gnomish Tinkerer figured out. But above and beyond that, each one of these games has expansions that we have planned that radically change the way you play the game. So you can play the original Dwarven Minor out of the box and have a good time, or you add this expansion and it's not like, okay, now there are 2 more cards to play with. Hooray. It totally changes the game. Like, there's one expansion where in the game you play as a miner and you're trying to get resources out of your mine in order to craft items for patrons who have come into your store. And there's a lot more to it than that. But we had one expansion where, you know, 2 players would play as dwarves going into the mine and 2 players play as orcs trying to get out of the mine, and you're trying to thwart each other. And it's a totally different game. There's another expansion that is called Treasures and Traps, which makes it almost like an RPG. It's crazy. So, but anyway, getting back to it, Dwarven Minor, it's a nice combination. It's a light Euro style game. So it's got the Euro element, but very light. It's kind of a nice intro to Euro games. If you have a friend that doesn't want to make that jump, it's a combination of Euro and, like a beer and pretzel game. So it takes maybe 2 rounds, 10 minutes to learn, to get the handle on, but you can play it over and over again, and the strategies start to emerge as you play, and you realize that this is a much more intricate game than you think. Mm-hmm. If people want to check it out, they can easily head to Kickstarter and search for Dwarven Minor, and there are 2 different videos on the front site, on the site there, that can explain it. We just put one up today that shows you some inside info on actual gameplay. But it's gotten great reviews. We had it test played by many people. We had the Syndicate, which is the largest gaming guild, I think, on the planet.
Wow.
Test it, and they liked it so much that they made us send more copies to other people in the Syndicate to test play, and they liked it so much that they've made an hour and a half long review of it.
Wow.
Yeah, great reviews. They just keep sending us quotes. Use these quotes about how much they love game, which to us is great. And we have friends that are practically throttling us, saying, "Hurry up, make the game!" And it's great, and we love it, and we really think it can add add a line of games, much like you know, how Catan has a bunch of games, or Carcassonne has a bunch of, they have a line, and I think Dwarven Miner can be that way. We even have, you know, we have a version that could be translated into a Star Trek version or a Star Wars version or whatever. It can go anywhere.
Nice.
And it's very addictive. So.
And I mean, looking at the game, I watched the video, and I mean, this is, I told Rob, this is the perfect game for me. Like, it's exactly the
right
type
up your alley. Yeah.
You're collecting resources, and then you're actually using it to craft items. I mean, I really, really dig that. And I dig that it looks like you said, it's light Euro, you know, mixed in with some American style. That's good. You know, that's where most of the stuff that I try and work on falls into that category. So that's what I love, is games where you can get the strategy, but they're so approachable. And that's a big deal, man. Approachability. And a game like this, I think, has it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And what's neat is there's a 30-point win. So the scoring track goes up to 30. But some of the cards have a point value of 15, 14, 13. So you can kind of, like the beginning of the game, everyone's kind of just trying to, you have a different strategy at the beginning, trying to maximize the abilities of the patrons you're helping. And then later on, you focus on just the point value so you can crank through to the end. So essentially, when you have, what you have in your hands, you have three patrons, and they have items that they need crafted. And when you make all those items for them, you get their point value, and they activate a special power, and that special power greatly affects the game. So it's just, and you can use those abilities pretty connivingly to thwart them.
Yeah, and I mean, how many patrons are there actually in the game? It looked like quite a few.
There are 15 different ones, but there are, I think, 42 patron cards.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and that's 15 different ones. That gives a nice spread of different abilities and such. I think that's a great idea.
Some of them actually activate mini games and things like that. It's just, it's all over the place and a lot of fun.
Cool. Yeah, well, we're looking forward to trying it. We're definitely going to be back in your Kickstarter, both of us, I think. And so it's going on right now. You're still in the early days of that, right?
Yeah, we have 23 days to go. It ends May 31st, and we're hoping people discover it, because it's just a great game. It's really great.
So all you listeners out there, you can go to Kickstarter and search for Dwarven Miner and take a look at it. The videos do look... the game looks excellent. We're excited about it.
We'll link it in the show notes, of course, as well.
Absolutely. We sure will.
Thank you.
One thing we always like to ask people who are established in the industry here, is, as we kind of start to wrap up the show, if you had one or two pieces of advice to give to somebody starting out, maybe in our position, or somebody even further down the track from us, you know, somebody just getting started, what kind of advice would you give a newbie?
Hang in there. number one, I would say, don't come up with one stellar game idea and expect that one to work. I would come up with half a dozen ideas, and that way you can look hard and do your research on who you're going to pitch the game to and figure out which one would be best for them, and then have a couple backups. I guess have some thick skin and just take the licks. I mean, you got to earn your dues, and perseverance will pay off. In fact, Mike, my partner, who is now the president of this company, did that very thing. He had some games and he hoofed it around conventions and pitched them, and finally got some support from somebody. And so it does happen. You just got to have patience.
Cool. That is great advice. One more thing I want to say. Sure. When we talked about Four Taverns, I forgot to mention this. This is something Rob and I both talked about before. Who wrote all of the text on those? Because it's great.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have like a novel there.
Yeah, well, that's what we do at Round of Dashing. We want to add lore. Like,
it was cool to hear you say that, by the way, because as soon as you said that, that was the first thing that clicked was, like, those cards.
That's so funny, because many people play the game and don't even read them. But that's That's Mike. Mike does that. He's a very good author, and we're actually writing a couple book series together. We're writing one that's steampunk, and we're writing one that's high fantasy. So,
wow,
yeah, we're busy, but yeah, that's great. I'm glad you like that. That's very important.
Yeah, those.
We're actually working on a little book for Dwarven Minor to give the history behind each one of these dwarves.
So. Oh, cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was like, I think literally the first thing that jumped out at us when you started playing Four Taverns is like, holy cow, there's a story on every single card.
Yeah. It matches what you have to do to complete the quest.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and I just really appreciate that because, you know, a lot of designers, especially publishers, you know, I mean, you have an in-house designer, basically, to put that much thought into it and that much, I mean, it's just it's cool. It's not something super flashy, but you know, for the people that get the game, it clicks with a lot of people. And I just think that's really, I think it's cool that you guys go the extra mile like that.
Yeah,
excellent. That's so good to hear because we do lose a lot of sleep over that stuff. So thank you.
Sure. Well, hey, why don't you throw out your website, your Twitter, whatever contact information you can, so people can find you and find your games.
All right, well, the easiest way is rather-games.com, or the place where you're probably going to get the most updates is our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/sir.barnaby, which is another story altogether. and right there it has all our Twitter information and everything for that.
Okay. So, excellent. Yeah.
Fantastic. And find Dwarven Minor on Kickstarter.
Seriously, though, go check it out. Everyone that's listening.
It looks excellent.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah. Grant Wilson, artist extraordinaire, thank you once again for hanging out with us today. We really, really appreciate it, man. It means so much to us.
Thank you. I'm having a blast. And anytime you guys want me back, just let me know.
All right. We'll hold you to that. And to all the listeners, thank you again for listening to the show. And stay tuned. We'll be back with you guys next week with more good times and more zany wackiness and all that stuff. I'm going to shut up now.
Good night.
Good night. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.